And the reason it's built into form firmware is that when we have let other engineers replicate and modify the source code, so that now the firmware isn't what it is, what it was supposed to be initially. And that happens with culture, and it happens...
I'm sorry, repeat that last part?
It wasn't intended to be this way. This is, we're not running the firmware on our systems that we should be. We should be running something that's almost identical to original source code. But when we walk on the garden, when we've developed our own culture, when we breed in ways that we're not supposed to, and we get genetic mutations that I don't think that God probably intended for us to have, possibly. That's a completely speculative. But let's say that those things are possible. What it means is we're broken at the firmware level.
I agree.
But we're not broken at the source code level.
And maybe it would be advantageous to look at it from the other standpoint and say, what does God condemn?
Who's that stranger?
In the Old Testament. And start from there. Yeah. And to say, if we start from the point of God saying, for example, that homosexuality, you know, a man sleeping with a man, is inappropriate, and we start from there, then does it really matter from a sin standpoint and from an appropriate behavior standpoint that we say, hey, I just feel this way,
right,
and I just want to act this way? Well, God seems to differentiate. He seems to take the position of, I don't care whether you don't understand, whether your preference for men, if you're a man, is something you were born with or something that's culturally motivated or whatever. I'm telling you that behavior is wrong, and that's the starting point. You don't participate in that.
I think I agree with you on the starting point side. I know you didn't mean it this way, so I'm wrongly dissecting what you're saying.
It's okay. We're just brainstorming.
Right, exactly. The statement, I don't care, is never true by God making it. What he means to say is, and I know what you mean.
Right,
by
he
it,
may take
is,
the Job approach.
Right.
You know, hey, I'm not going to tell you this stuff. You just got to.
Because there's no point in telling you because you can't understand it at this point.
Right.
So just, you know, if you trust me, if I am, here's the easy logic. Am I your designer? Yes. Do you think I'm good? Yes. Do I think that, you know, this is God talking? Do you think that I want you to be happy? Yes. Okay, stop arguing with me. This is what's going to make you happy. I will give you understanding later, but I don't want to try to tell you 10 terabytes of data. I'm going to give you a simple executable, run it. I'm getting all computer. I want you to do this one. Just do this thing, and then I'll give you more information later. And isn't that how it works with everything? And that's how it works with your own kids.
That's kind of
going to be that way. You tell the kid. Yeah, exactly. It's the way it worked with Job. Hey, Job, how about you let me run the earth? You worry about the part that I gave you, right?
Right.
And by the way, I was, you know, you almost feel like God wants to say, I was defending you to Satan, okay? So why are you giving me a hard time? You know, I was the one that had your back, and you are now gun-decking me. So, you know, it's one of those things that when Job reached Job later, I don't know when it was written, Job's going to be like, oh, gosh, if I'd only towed the line all the way to the end.
Almost.
Yeah, I mean, good points. But I think Skylar said it, we're conflating it all.
Yes,
that's correct. That's my point. Conflation is the point.
But I don't think it matters for you because for you, the conflation doesn't seem to be an issue because your position seems to be this is all prescribed, and it's all prescribed what I would call very simply. It's man, woman, heterosexual relations. That's...
No, eunuchs.
Okay, yes, eunuchs. Which I look at and go... It feels like we have limited references in the Bible to be able to speak on this particular issue with sound kind of foundational biblical doctrine. And what I would fall back to is the love your neighbor, some of the more broader overarching ones, and go, this is more important. It's more important to be loving and accepting of people. And obviously, like I said, a much more liberal approach as opposed to
well, okay, fair.
Some Leviticus.
With your permission, let me get personal on this one insofar as I'll ask your personal opinion. And
sure.
I'm actually going to pick up Guy's gauntlet on this, or Guy's,
okay.
I'll pick up, defend Guy's position on this one. Well, I a couple of diagnostics questions first. Do you think
sure.
the Old Testament is inspired scripture?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe that God said, don't be gay?
No.
Don't execute homosexual acts?
I think that needs to be viewed through a... So I've always looked at that and read that more in a like the, and I'm losing the name of the Greek guy.
Cultural?
No. The orgies and the, look.
Caligula.
This, Caligula, thank you. Yeah. Who was it? There you go.
Roman.
Right. Rome. This, sorry, I say Greek, sorry. But I look at it as, look, do not be sexually immoral. As opposed to, there's nowhere in the Bible that it says, if two men who love, there's nowhere that it says two men can't have loving, long-term, lifelong relations in what we would say as kind of a modern gay marriage kind of relationship. There's actually places in the Bible that you can read between the lines and go, that may be what was going on there.
Well, when I look at David and Jonathan, what exactly. I see are, but, you know, they're not getting married.
And there's no sex going on.
Right. So, let's pretend for a second that there was sex going on. Does other parts of the Bible condemn that? Would David have been wrong by the Deuteronomic and Exodus-derived law? Does the law say, if a man lies with a man, he shall be put to death?
Yes.
Okay, so if God, so I want to go to his point and be like, yes, these questions, difficult questions, hard to deal with, and Dennis is right. No, was it Dennis? I don't know, maybe it was you who were right. Okay. You're right on...
It was probably me that was
I don't
right.
really get it, it was probably balance of probability. If, you're right, unless you stand in somebody's shoes, you really can't authoritatively pronounce on their position. So I am trying to do it from generalizing it,
right.
But I think I have a good rational reason to generalize it. And so if we're going to do that in general, and note that, yeah, nobody really, we all at least agree that God has the right mm-hmm. to say it. And sure. if he said, don't do this, then why not execute on that and say, I don't know how to deal with it mentally, but I know this, putting two guys in a marriage that they're going to sleep with each other, that does violate scripture. So even if I don't understand it, I can execute on the simple and figure out the complex later.
Okay, but flip it around and go, there's a lot of things that are ascribed in the Old Testament that we do not do as a modern society. We don't stone people to death. Why don't we?
Right, good question.
The advocacy would only be to...
But you're picking and choosing. Like you're saying, well, these things that we don't agree with as a society or as a subset of society, we're using that as our rationalization.
Agreed.
But you're not taking it to the extreme of going... And, by the way, out in the parking lot, we're going to pick out some rocks because I know where there's some gay people.
So here's the difference why, and I think you're right. And let me take an extreme position here. Again, I think people will consider an extreme position. One of the reasons that I wanted to have the debate with the Orthodox Jewish guys is because I think that we are not, and I think the term that people are going to want to apply to me is legalistic enough. I don't think we do a good enough job following the law. I don't think we should have thrown the law out with the bathwater. And by the way, neither does Paul. If you read Paul... Right. tightly, you see that he is very much about follow the law. Now, there are some laws that seem to be dispensational, and now you get into theological discussion. So the real question would be, is homosexuality a dispensational law, or is it a dietary law? Is it a way to follow the Sabbath, or is it that the Sabbath ought to be followed in total? And so, I mean, you know, to me, a guy wants to love a guy. I love the guy that I was roommates with at Air Force, a lifelong buddy. If he told me to give away up to half my fortune in order to help him and his family, I'd do it in a heartbeat. That's friendship. And notice what the Bible, which is God's truth, right, said about the relationship between David and Jonathan. What did they say about that love? The love that was between David and Jonathan is
better than
greater than the love for women. That's interesting. Very interesting.
Well, now what is Skylar's question? What about stoning witches?
So I'll get there. I don't.
Did it also say that about the love between Moses and God?
Yeah, so the idea was, in the context it was going to be understood, what does this kind of love look like and mean? It doesn't mean that I'm saying your best friend ought to be better than, you know, than your relationship with your wife. That's not what I'm saying. Okay, but what we're saying,
that's what God said.
But that's the way that it was there, at least with David and Michael, with David and Bathsheba, with David and Abigail. Apparently, he was better at loving Jonathan than he was here. And is that even type of love? And I would say this, the type of love... When we talk about a male love between a husband and his wife, that is a role-based love. Of this marriage is built for a reason, and here's the purpose. And the purpose, interestingly, is not an eternal purpose. You will not be married to your wife or your husband in the next world. You will not be.
No.
Okay, so that means that whatever this is, and me, and that's finite and not eternal. I would say the kind of love between David and Jonathan is an eternal love. Now, what you ought to have is that kind of David-Jonathan love for your wife as well. Okay, but what it means is you love her in heaven. When you see her in heaven, she's not a helpmeet for you anymore. She is somebody on parity with you. It's the true equality that we didn't even get into that we should have in class.
Yes, we should.
Clearly, this thing needs to have gone several classes. So after the Jewish thing, I guess we're going to be back on this topic. But
because Katie and I are going to go to war.
Fair enough. I got my money already set on one side. So, I mean, your point is an excellent one, but we have to answer that one the same way that you answer all the rest of them. Why do we not stone gay people? Why do we not stone adulterers? Why do we not stone people who... Why do we put people who kill other people in jail for life sentences? Is that the right thing to do? One of the other difference, and why not stone witches? So what I would say is this. The Israeli society is a voluntary society, like every society ought to be, North Korea accepted or whatever. But at the end of the day, you volunteer to be... If you show up to a society and you wear all the gear and you know what the law is and you sleep with another guy... What you don't say is, I can't believe you're going to stone me. Because then my response to you is, you're an idiot. You should have just gone and lived with the Amalekites. So go live somewhere else. But this society follows these rules. Now the question is, what if you're born into that society? And right. So all those arguments, yes, agree. But that's where I would go with that one. Is I honestly think that you've heard it said from a societal perspective. We've got more prisons and prisoners in America than anybody else does, as far as I know, on the face of the planet.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's not right either. Right? We're doing something wrong.
Why not stone homosexuals?
I would say in a voluntary society where they agreed to live by those rules and they violate them, that it's not stoning them, but if it's a death penalty, it's a death penalty. Now, the question is, does God, did Jesus coming do something different to the consequences of the law than we ought to live by today? That is a whole other discussion, and I can't give you an answer in 5 minutes.
And so here's the analogy that I would make, is that much of the Old Testament law represented the civil law of that society.
Right.
A portion of it was the spiritual law for their relationship with God. There was a lot of overlap, right, because they were living in a true theocracy. That era is over. That era came to an end with the arrival of Jesus in the new covenant. We now live in many different civil societies, the United States, Canada, Germany, Japan, name whatever country you want, and there's a civil society that now governs when the death penalty will be implemented.
Right. So the Old Testament doesn't count anymore.
That's the portion of the Old Testament that were the civil law of that society.
This was God saying stone homosexuals.
And Dennis, what did Christ say about stoning an adulteress?
Throw it up again next time.
Absolutely. Let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Yeah, so obviously there is a change there.
Okay, there are two things going on.
Thanks for being sane.
One part of it is it still a sin? And the other part is, has the penalty changed? So you see, for example, in Paul's writings that he goes through this laundry list. I think it's in Titus or Timothy. He goes through this laundry list of sins, and one of those is homosexuality. And then at the bottom of it, he says, and so were some of you until you came to Christ. Meaning that when he met the homosexual, he didn't go, oh, you're a homosexual? Where are the stones? I'm going to kill you, because that's the Old Testament ruling there. He actually knew that these people were participating in these sins, and he drew them out of that.
Well, and the implication...
That shows that it's still a sin. It's still a sin. It's something that God doesn't want you to do. The question of whether the application of justice has changed is a completely separate question.
Well, I think the implication there is that Christ is taking on the punishment there.
And that may be.
Right.
That may be exactly right. But don't conflate the two that, hey, just because we're not stoning homosexuals or adulterers or fornicators today, that all of a sudden God's happy with it.
Right.
And that's an incorrect conclusion.
I think what Guy is saying gets directly at what Christ is saying when he says, I come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. Right. The purpose of the law ultimately was for our spiritual benefit, for our relationship with God. Yes, there are civil components to it to regulate a society.
Right.
But that special era of the Jewish nation as a civil society came to a close with the arrival of Messiah.
This point cannot be overemphasized. This is...
Forgive me, I got to run or my wife's going to stone
guy.
Me. See you next week.
See you, guy.
This is the core, this is the genius of it, is when Jesus came to fulfill the law, a lot of what he showed was, this was the purpose of the law, okay? It wasn't just about don't sleep with someone who's not your wife, it's don't even lust. It wasn't about don't kill, it was don't even be angry. It wasn't, you know, so he's like, do you see where all this is going? And then when he's, when the scribes ask him, what's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself, second one is like it. He's basically, is this, when he fulfills the law and he demonstrates the love, he shows the love, he lives it out, here's the idea. If you love somebody, and this is to you, this is your son, if you love your son, if I love your son, I will do for your son what I did. I don't know if you remember, but this was 3 years ago when you were talking about how other Christians told him, and I was like, you should ask this, these questions back to the Christians. And you jumped on it, and I think sent him an email. Yeah.
I was dreaming. What did you say?
Don't worry about it. The idea was, I think I should love your son, and I should demonstrate Christ's love to your son. And
then
ultimately, 3 years ago, you and he and I exchanged emails so that I could actually tell him some zinger things to say to Christians when they challenge him about being gay, because I actually wanted to challenge those Christians on the other side of, like, why does Paul run through 8 sins before he gets to homosexuality? And have you done any of these 8 sins? Because it sounds like Paul and like God have got more of an exception with the way you're living your life than the way that I'm living my life, to at least make him think about it, was the idea. So, and you and I have talked about your son a lot. So I don't know him personally, but I know him through your description of him. So unless you're lying to me, then I know your son. So ultimately, this point is the core, I think, is know why the law is there. And it's all to point to a single set of acts, a single way of thinking, and it's love. If you love, you will not do these things. And here's the tricky thing, and this will make your head explode, but if you love, if I love my friend, who oddly is named Mason Dula, if I love Mason, my friend, he, and I will not sleep with him, because it's actually not loving to do so. Why? Well, he ended up getting married to a girl named Virginia, and they've got their own kid that's a spitting image of him, and you know, all that cool stuff. I would have distracted him away from that ultimate goal of what he would have had. I would have made him less happy.
He's not going to sleep with you, Scott, because he's not gay.
So at any rate, do you see the point that I'm getting to? And so that's why I would emphasize that the end of the law is love. And if we act with love, none of this stuff becomes
okay.
A problem.
Question. If the final goal, the final thing is love, my son and his partner have been together for 25 years now. They have been monogamous.
Yes.
They are now married through the state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
They love each other. If love is the final
thing,
issue,
yes.
Why is what they do a sin?
Because what I would say is, to love each other is not a sin. To sleep with each other is a sin. So why does it have to have, answer me this, why does it have to have a sexual component?
Because they lust for each other, because that's their sexual orientation.
Okay.
They could care, they don't want to even look at a woman, they look at each other sexually, lovingly, friendly, companion-wise.
Now here's the hard thing, because it's going to set, and I want to be clear that I'm blaming 99% of this, maybe more, on society, and by society I actually mean us. And let's say 1% on your son. I don't want to quibble about the numbers, but just for the sake of argument, I want to say it this way. These guys, and I know what you've asked your son. Hey, son, I mean, ever growing up, you went out with this girl, she was a knockout. Hey, Dad, it was all a lie. I always liked guys.
It was for show.
It was all for show. Right. What I would say is this. One, I won't even get into some of that stuff. I will go back to, when we talk about him in particular and who he is, and where he started growing up and how it all worked out for him, there are a couple paths he could have followed. But let's say that he walks the path that he does, and this is the point that I think you won't agree with. But let me make it this way:
one path he could have walked, Scott.
Okay, so one, I disagree with that. It's not true.
Well, it is true.
Well, we are in a fundamental disagreement there. So
agree to disagree.
So, well, as an example, man, I didn't want to get off on this. I will say it this way. There's no gay gene.
No what?
No gay gene. There's no gene that makes you gay.
There's
right?
not one gene, no.
Right. There's no combination of genes that make you gay.
Yes, there is.
Okay. If you're going to say that, and maybe that's really the starting point.
Let me back up. It is a combination of cultural and genetic, but it's more genetic than it is cultural. That's the state of the science now.
So let's disagree on the science, and I will send you the twin studies. I'm assuming you're aware of all the twin studies.
Yes.
Okay. And you think the conclusion of the twin studies is what?
The conclusion of science is...
No, the twin studies. Because that's the only science that has been relevant that's been performed on this one.
Well,
what's the conclusion of
the twin studies you're talking about?
Okay. There's a set of them. And if you look into the twin studies, what you'll find is they were clever about it. It was identical twins, fraternal twins, raised by the same people, not raised by the same people, incidence rates in homosexuality, each one of them, et cetera. Science very clearly predicts that if it's genetic, it's going to go this way, and if it's environment, it's going to go that way. All things are a combination of genes and environment to a degree, but the bottom line is there's no gene that turns you, that makes you gay. There's no set of genes that make you gay.
No.
There's no set of genes that make you gay.
It's a genetic, big genetic component.
Not according to the science. So,
and the,
that being
the other
case,
thing to support the cultural aspect of this is historically, you look at various societies. In ancient Greece, right, you study the Athenians, the Corinthians, the Spartans and whatnot, amongst the warrior elite aristocracy, homosexuality was the norm. There's not a different set of genes, and their ancestors do not continue the same rates of homosexuality within that society.
It wasn't the norm, Carl.
It absolutely was the norm.
That's the myth.
No.
You haven't seen the bases. The bases are, the art that they do is disgusting. It's men fondling little boys on the base. You know, the stuff that we always think of.
That doesn't mean it's the norm.
It is absolutely the norm. History has agreed upon.
Yeah, this is not a debatable topic within history. All historians agree that within the Greek aristocracy of the Golden Age of Greece, we're talking 500 BC, homosexuality was the norm within that class of people. There is no historic debate on that then. Similar, I'll go to today. Go to Afghanistan. And there's a horrible, horrible practice that everyone who's served in Afghanistan is aware of. If you are a senior military officer, you have what's called a chai boy, and you have gay sex, and you rape that chai boy on a weekly basis. It's a cultural thing. It's not a genetic thing. It's if you are in a position of power in Afghanistan, that is your right to have a little boy that you rape over and over and over again his entire until he goes on to become a man.
They rape the new recruits and all that kind of stuff. I fired a guy after doing that and found out later. That was the norm. That's what they do. And that they were like, oh, I don't understand why the American fired, why the commander fire us. That's how they roll.
I mean, again, the stories are very graphic. I'm not going
to
go further.
So you're now telling me that there's no genetic component to being gay?
I would say that the twin studies that Scott cites put together with the historical evidence as to various cultures that have had radically different rates of homosexuality than other cultures that are different about the position.
So what's the bottom line? There's no genetic component?
I would say I don't see any genetic component.
Well, you're confusing the notion of gay and homosexual activity. I mean, because what you're describing in that time is a power thing. That's rape. And that's just something that in our fallenness we decided to overlook because...
That's a good point.
You know, big warriors needed to release some tension, and boys were more convenient than girls. Or however society was arranged population-wise in that time. I think homosexual activity, because of a power structure, is different than a life's chosen point of gayness.
And so this is they're actually all related, and I will make this point as least graphically as possible, and then I actually want to move on from it, because I don't want to, with your permission, let's not go any further down this path, so to speak. Sexual arousal is not a function of male or female. The animal kingdom, when dolphins are swimming by each other in pods during a certain portion of the season, certain things happen, you'll see male dolphins with erections rubbing up against each other and all this kind of stuff. It is a confusion of a mating instinct. The same is true, and this is why the whole Kinsey scale was about, that it is possible to generate sexual arousal in both sexes that is not... that doesn't even occur with your declared preference and your actually believed preference, i.e. I prefer women, it's still possible to be aroused by men. That's the bottom line. Now, the question of whether the point that he's making of if it's a power thing, if it's a rape thing, and you see this in rape of women and all that other kind of stuff where sexual function might fail halfway through the act because the act was something else initially, the idea behind it is one cannot turn around and say, because sexual arousal, thus identity. That's what I'm saying. Otherwise, rapists have to identify as rapists. Otherwise, people in power have to identify as a new sexual identity based solely on the fact that they've been put in a position of power. None of this makes sense until you turn around and say, the use of the instinct has to be in accordance with purpose. And when it's in accordance with purpose, it finds its natural fulfillment that maximizes happiness. And I actually want to leave it there for reasons I think are
valid. Let me just add my point.
Yeah, please.
I could rub up against Carl for 3 months.
This is the kind of stuff that I don't want to talk about. But the bottom line is, it may be the case for you, but for the general pop, the whole reason the Kinsey scale exists is maybe you're Conan, man. Maybe you're Conan.
Kinsey was wrong.
maybe. But the point is, the data don't support that conclusion. So go look at the data first, and then let's have a discussion.
Stay away from me, Carl.
Anything else that I... anything else? Someone said that the consensus was I had punted on... Where's James?
Oh, yeah. He'll be back.
Yeah.
He'll be back.
They just like to go down and sing and then come back.
Yeah. I punted on what? I didn't. Someone said I didn't answer a question.
You answered Guy's question.
What was Guy's question?
I'm just telling you what James
said. What James said. Guys, if I understood him right, and maybe we can say it again when James comes back, was it amoral to identify as the other gender? Immoral. Is it amoral or immoral? And what I would say is violation of purpose is immoral. So let me make an equation. We'll do this SAT style. Choosing to be gay, choosing to be homosexuality, to be homosexual, is analogous. If you are choosing to be choosing to like men, if you're supposed to like women, by God's equation, is analogous to choosing to be a fighter pilot when he wants you to be a ground warrior. And why is it an equivalency? The equivalency is this: each of them are actions and choices that result in actions. And each of them is a violation of purpose. This is why, to me, purpose is supreme. Is anything you do that violates purpose is wrong. And that ultimately the laws in the Old Testament are derivative of that idea. The laws in the New Testament are derivative idea. Now the question is, what's the principal purpose? Now that one we can answer from Scripture. What is the principal purpose of society and of relationship with God?
But you do have like some people like, many people who say, like, believe me, if I had a choice to, like, live in this society and choose to like girls, then I would do that in a heartbeat. Because I've talked to people who said, like, this is the kind of society where it's, like, not, like, you know, generally, you know, to like other men. So believe me, if I had a choice to, like, say, you know what, I'm just going to leave that here and stop that, right? Then,
and,
so.
And my point that, you know, Skylar and I went around and around a little bit on this one was, I would make the identical point about how I feel about other people who either cut me off in traffic or are jerks at work or even disagree with me. You know what I mean? If I could feel different, man, I wish I could feel differently, but that's just the way that I am. That's not a justification to do what I want to do. Not if it violates God's purpose. Now, God's purpose for me, part of God's purpose for me, one of the reasons that I'm at least partially this way, was when it comes time to pull a trigger on somebody, it's relatively easy for me to do that. So part of his programming for me was, if I need a warrior, if I need someone who can dispense justice, I mean, nobody weeps over the executioner, but how hard is it to be an executioner? You know, you live on the outside of society, you don't get to deal with anybody, this is old school medieval executioners, you're feared by everyone, you're hated in some ways. Who wants to be an executioner? But yet he's fulfilling a duty that the society needs. So that's part of who I am, not woe is me, feel sorry for me, but the idea is that's some of how I'm bent, and so you can see the good side of it, which is when a trigger needs to be pulled, I'm the first guy on the trigger. The bad side of it is when somebody disagrees with me, I get unrighteously angry at them. So they're not causal. The idea is it's my choice in both scenarios, and I think that purpose thing flows, and by the end of the way, the answer to the question I was asking, I thought we were going to throw up, is love. It is all about love. But don't be confused about what love is. That's the other ticket.
So your condemnation of gays, transgenders, is all based on the purpose of God.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly
it. Well, then I have nothing more to say.
Exactly. And that was my point to you in class, is when I pointed at morality, because you don't agree that there's objective morality, then that's why we disagree on this.
Right.
I think like the main problem is that like in this society, like are basically just on this world stage, like the words sex and love are like one and the same thing, because, you know, as someone who kind of, you know, busies themselves with words, like there's no like, you know, can, you know, people like they think of love and they think of like, you know, sexual desire. And, you know, it's really like fatalistic, and everyone's going to cringe when I hear this, but if the purpose of sex is only to procreate,
right,
then that's, you know, kind of just, you know, turns the whole argument into a parking lot.
and it really does. And honestly, I will say this, and this, I know this is going to wrap me back into looking like a Hasidic Jew, and the purpose of sex is procreation.
No,
Pope is not wrong about that. It is not,
it's not the only purpose.
It's the purpose of it. Now there are, you know, the purpose of it is not recreation.
Because it's one of the purposes.
I don't think so. I think the purpose is this. Now, there are side benefits of all these things. For instance, the purpose the purpose of getting married is to provide an environment in which that can happen.
Well, every time maybe the purpose of wife, are you trying to have a kid?
The purpose of raising food, the purpose of planting crops and raising food is what?
To have food.
Survive.
right. I mean, let's not make it harder than it is. It's to feed people. Is there any other benefit to doing that? You get more muscular because you're a farm boy. You have that joy that comes from raising crops and all that kind of stuff. Look at the Peterson Farm Brothers who are all over YouTube and doing their farm parody songs or whatever else. There's a lot of joy that comes with something whose primary purpose is filling the bellies of yourself and other people. But there's this ancillary benefit. That is the same way in sex. And when we treat sex as recreation, it twists our minds and it causes us to think that love and sex are the same thing. I mean, your point about love and sex is, I mean, we could talk 4 weeks on that alone. And I wish I could talk. I wish we had to. I know there are a small group of people in here that are willing to talk about love that much. I wish that we spent 6 months talking about love because we've got it so wrong. Because our society's been telling us since we're this tall what love is, and they're completely wrong about it. Here and then here.
So, when you talk about purpose singular, I feel like
right,
it would
right.
be necessary.
Primary, maybe, is the right way to say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because I feel like to make a truth claim like sex, the purpose is procreation, that has to be backed up.
What I mean to say is I want to differentiate it in such a way that says the purpose is not recreational, i.e., if you are, this is where the Catholic Church comes down, is like, don't do these things because you're violating primary purpose in doing so. So it's not saying you can't have sex other than the time that you determine both sides are the most fertile. It's as you're doing this, don't prohibit it because you're violating the initial purpose. So what I'm saying is in secondary purpose, don't violate the initial purpose. And let's look at the farming example as an idea. If it's working that makes you, if you like the fact that you get buff from farming, then what you don't do is say, well, what I'm going to do is just go lift weights and fail to do so instead of dragging the plow through the field. Because what's going to happen is you're going to yield less crops as a result of putting primary and secondary purpose ahead of primary purpose. The point is a good point, but that's what I mean by that.
Well, I mean, even within that, though, I feel like to say that we have to allow for the primary purpose. For instance, like if you were to grow barley and hops to make beer, you may not at all be doing that for the caloric component
value,
in particular for the hops. I wouldn't then say that it was wrong to grow it, that it was outside of purpose.
The analogy fails when it comes to raising hops. I meant in wheat.
Well, but I'm saying the same for sex and saying that it has a singular purpose. For me, I would really need to see that.
You're right, primary. It has a primary purpose.
The state you're describing would make me think that you align yourself with the Catholic view on that.
I actually do.
So no...
So we started off doing the birth control thing. I don't know that... I will admit that I'm not certain what the answer here is, but if you ask me to put money down on it, I would say we probably ought not grab it. The problem is we're so different in this society. I mean, what happens when we have 20 kids in this society? What, you want to hear something crazy? ISIS isn't a threat if we live that way. ISIS is not a threat if we live like God had prescribed and we didn't do birth control. You know why? We would have overrun the world a long time ago, and they wouldn't even be around. Carl.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of
and
respond.
And countering ISIS isn't the ultimate purpose. Yeah. Just raising a provocative point.
Definitely a secondary purpose. I just wanted to respond to Dennis's comment that, Dennis, you said, Scott, your condemnation of homosexuals. And I want to make it clear that here at RBC, yes, we say homosexuality is a sin, but so is every other sexual sin, right? So like when you and I were just talking, Dennis, when I lust for a woman that's not my wife, that's a sexual sin. That's sexual brokenness, no different from the let me finish my point here, Dennis. No different than the homosexual sin. And if you want to hear RBC's position articulated on this extremely well, I think it was February of this year, I might be off on the month, but Mike Minter preached a 3-week series on sexual brokenness and how we as a Christian church, and he affirmed that position very clearly, that we are in no position to, homosexuals are welcome in this church. I'm welcome in this church, even though I'm sexually broken, just like a homosexual is welcome in this church.
You are sexually broken?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As am I. I mean, that's the point of what I was saying in class.
problem is that when you get so, because like I'm guessing like the vast majority of people in this church are heterosexual.
Right.
I'm guessing, but the problem is like throughout history, when you get so many of those people in one group, the outliers get demonized,
yeah,
and
right.
they get burned at the stake.
And that's and that's why I think that Jesus did the, although it's maybe apocryphal, but that if there's a point to he who's without sin cast the first stone, mm-hmm. it wasn't he who committed adultery has not committed adultery cast the first stone. It was he who's committed no sin cast the first stone. And what that was going to hearken everybody back there to was they knew very clearly what were capital crimes and what weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them knew
that they committed.
Hey, if the light of day saw everything, I'd be getting stoned too. And I think that's where they go. And your point is well taken.
I got 2 points. Why is the Christianity so obsessed with sex?
I don't think that we are.
Yes,
I would say the
second
society,
point is,
wait, hang on.
I think humans
to respond
general.
To answer your question. Christianity is not obsessed with sex. You want to see obsessed with sex? Go walk in Times Square. Now go walk in a church. See who talks about sex more. See who thinks about sex more. See who obsesses about sex more. If you think that it's even a 10-to-1 ratio, I'll eat my words. But what's
church
your
is calling the whips. But that's not my real point. Are you telling me that when I go home today, and my wife was on the, well, she's beyond, let's say 20 years ago.
Yeah.
If I went home and she was on the pill and I had sex with her, that is being sexually broken?
No, well, okay, so my answer to your question, honestly, is I don't know. Now, if I'm
you said
this is a Catholic church.
You said the purpose of sex was procreation.
Yes.
Well, if I practice it so that it's impossible to procreate.
Yeah, if you're trying intentionally never to have kids and you're in a married relationship and God hasn't specifically told you not to have kids, then I think that doing that violates purpose.
God hasn't told you.
You know what I mean?
God, seriously?
Yeah. What do you mean, seriously? Why is that? I don't understand why that's the incredulous part of
that.
Well,
how would God tell me that I was not to have kids?
You were a Christian up until age what?
I don't know. A long time ago.
So you know about Christianity?
Yeah.
Tell me how God tells people stuff from the Bible.
Tell you what?
How does God tell people things that he wants them to know based on your knowledge of Christianity and the Bible?
I'm talking about Dennis Clark.
Yes.
Back when he was married.
Yes.
God never told me to have or not have children.
Okay, I'm asking you, how does God tell people things? You've been a Christian for 20 years, you know the answer to this one, right?
No.
Okay, that might inform whether you've been a Christian for 20 years.
Now, don't start that shit, Scott.
I can't help it. You can't claim to be a Christian and say you've got no idea how anybody in the Bible ever heard from God. Whether it's visions, whether it's dreams, whether it's what Jesus said, how you'll hear, whether it's what Paul said, how you'll hear, whether it's what happened to Elijah the prophet, whether it's what happened to Samuel the priest. None of these make any sense to you because you actually don't know anything about the Bible.
I've read the Bible.
James, what was your question?
And he's given me pretty direct.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think there might not just be one purpose for sex, and I think biology kind of clues us into that.
Yeah, I meant to say a primary purpose.
Because definitely it forms like permanent, long-lasting bonds with somebody.
Right.
And I think that's what I've heard, because we actually went through kind of sex as for procreation as its sole purpose, as kind of we tested that out in our class at my school. And it came to be where, what about the people who can't have kids for some reason, all that kind of thing? Should they not have sex in their marriage, all that stuff? And what I kind of came down to was the idea that that's its primary purpose, but you can do it for its secondary purpose. And there was one point and not be okay, but there was the point you said about if you get married and you want to never have kids,
mm-hmm.
is that what we kind of decided was, is that kind of holding part of the marriage back, where you're saying I'm not willing to commit to this level of attachment to you with having kids, that kind of thing?
Right.
I think that's a strong point.
This is a good point, and this is why it's important to me to talk. This is why it's important to me to talk to God about these things. Only in the case of the perfect world that we never sinned, the garden is what it is every rule generalizable. Okay, so every marriage in the garden, they all look the same in some ways, right? They happen a certain way. There's no genetic problem. There's no physical problem. Everybody's capable of having kids. Everybody will have kids. This all works out. Be fruitful and multiply. That actually applies to everybody. When you live in a fallen world, purpose is going to vary. Why? Because there's evil that has to be, that are counterfactuals to things that are going to happen good. So in this case, you have to ask the question, I am my fiance, I am my bride. God, what is your purpose for us? What is your purpose for us? Now, I'll say, Bob tells this story publicly enough that I'll tell it too. Bob Schull, who I actually based my my thoughts on procreation off of. Dennis, this guy's got...
You're going to have a lot of kids.
He's a youth pastor here. He and his wife started off saying, it seems to us from Scripture that God opens a womb when he wants to, he closes when he wants to. They had four kids. And by the time they had four kids, they were like, maybe our theology isn't right on this one. So they started talking about whether they should do birth control, and they had number five during the discussion, basically. Like, it was an ongoing discussion.
She's pregnant. Well, he could.
So they start on one form of birth control, and it fails. And they have a sixth kid. And so they're like, well, that birth control is clearly not reliable, at least for us, so we're going to go to a second type of birth control. They go to a second type of birth control. That fails. Number seven's on the way. And they're like, okay, somebody's going to have to go to get surgery. So they're discussing the surgery and scheduling it and all that stuff, and number eight's on the way. And so they're like,
all right,
something wrong. He goes, Bob goes and gets the surgery. And either didn't wait and go get second tested or whatever, didn't wait to prescribe 90 days or whatever else. And number nine's on the way post surgery for Bob. And so when they took nine out, because it was a C-section, because poor Lisa, right? Yeah. Take nine out, it was a hysterectomy as well. So now it's impossible. And she may have been at her end of childbearing capacity. But the bottom line is God overruled their attempts in not miraculous, but in interesting ways, so that they have nine kids. Now look at the Schull family and those boys. Mm. And think about Boaz and Peter.
I don't know.
Right. Sure you're allowed to vote, right? But the bottom line is,
team of kids.
They got their own squad minus. And they are an inspiration, and they are the spine of the youth program.
And it was all because God overruled their contraceptive practices.
My point here is, God, in my belief, had nine kids for Bob and Lisa. Bob and Lisa might have stopped at four. But the purpose, if you ask them, do you wish we hadn't had Bo and Peter, and I forget the order of them. They blend together, especially when you see them.
Yeah. That's very true.
What would they, and by the way, handsome bunch of guys too, more than one girl, came to the youth group and became a believer in Jesus because they showed up there for Joshua or whoever else. But, I don't know all
it's
the reasons
just like
that
it's
stuff
everything
happens.
You can possibly jumble.
Right. But that's the thing. But you're exactly right. That's the thing. For God, for us, it's impossibly jumbled. You just can't read it all. He's playing four-dimensional chess on a board that's a million miles with pieces that get to choose whether they obey him or not. And he still has it all worked out. That's where Guy's point, I only agree with Guy when he's not here, apparently. Guy's point is a good one, is stop trying to solve the problem and just follow the steps you've been given.
To work. Answer your statement earlier about how Christianity is obsessed with sex, I don't think the faith system itself is. I think Christians, the people who try to practice it, are.
as a function
because,
of society.
Yeah, as a function,
when you
because,
go to see
yeah.
Syrian Orthodox Christians practicing what they do and living in their society, they're not obsessed like we would be obsessed
yeah.
with sex.
And no, I definitely agree too that if you look at culture, if you watch commercials, if you look at ads, culture is... It's like the biggest thing in our culture, so the fact that we emphasize it a little bit makes sense, because that's like one of the biggest things we're facing.
Katie and Amazing.
So right now, I'm choosing a career that is as best in line with what I perceive as my godly identity as possible.
Yes.
If birth control is wrong in your view, and because of that, I have maternity clothes going out of style.
Right, right.
Like, how does that relate to gender identity and gender equality if I am not able, then, to pursue what I perceive as my identity
Let me go back and retroactively be careful about it. Because I often speak opinion with the same force that I speak conviction.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weak point. I'm sorry. It's just the way
I'm actually curious how that relates. I'm not attacking your position. I'm curious.
So when I say I'm confused about it, I mean that legitimately. So I've had a vasectomy because we didn't think we were going to be able to have kids. I've been shooting handheld 20-watt SATCOM for 5 years. My assumption was that ain't an option. As it turned out, we did the IVF thing, and we were very careful with it. We were like, we believe that, we don't know, And I don't know. I don't know. Is conception, when should we treat that life the same we should as later on? My gut instinct is yes, but the bottom line is I don't know, and so I'm not going to err. I'm going to err on the side of not killing a person, right? That's not a bad idea at any rate. So we told the doc, we're like, we want to do something special and different. We want you to fertilize a number of embryos so that the ones that we'll actually take, because for those who know the process, that we only end up with like one embryo or two embryos. Well, we don't want to end up with eight, because we're going to feel a moral duty to have them all. And we don't want to have eight kids. And we don't want to have eight kids, so to speak. So he did it. I couldn't believe it, but he did it, and insurance paid for it. We ended up with, I think, we did two rounds. In round one, we ended up with one, and that's Seth. And we, now I'm doing this wrong. I think we ended up with three. We ended up with two rounds, but we ended up with three actually working. So we got three good embryos, so to speak. And even the ones that were not good embryos, we were going to go after two, but they stopped growing completely. So the bottom line is that only three embryos resulted. We put Seth across, Seth was born. So we're waiting after Seth, where she's about to go back to do all the crazy shots and all that other blood tests and all that. It's a real pain to do for her. For me, it's no pain. No shots for me. So we're waiting for her to get her next cycle, and she's not getting her cycle. And like normal people, we finally clued in and ran a blood test on her, and she's pregnant. Naturally. So now we're like, okay, well, I guess we were wrong about the whole IVF thing. Why did we do that? And one of our speculations is, given who Tracy and I are, if we'd had one kid, we might have been happy with that. If we'd had two, Tracy and I agree, with two kids under two right now, we'd have been like, no more kids, this is enough, we're done. Mm-hmm. He may have given us, we got two, we call them Laufey and Loki, frost giants, living in Jotunheim. He may have done that because he knows we would not have done so otherwise, and he wants us to have four or three, or maybe it is two, maybe they don't work out. But at the end of the day, I made choices about reproduction before I thought through all of it. And so this is a fancy way. I'm just giving you my story and saying that I based it off of Bob's some, but that ultimately I don't know the answer to your question. And the interaction between the duty to have children and the duty to follow the career that God has for you, both of them appear to me to be scripturally evidenced.
Identity wrong, or, I mean, that's why I bring it up.
Right, so that's where I would say, that's where, if you are, and I know you enough to know y'all enough to know you're sincere in your heart in this request. Sometimes God wants us to pray for a while about something before he gives an answer. Now, exactly why, I can speculate, but I don't know for sure. But what I would say is this, if you know that's the answer, do what I didn't do. So don't do as I did, do as I say. And say, if you're saying, Lord, I think you want me to do this, but I also think you might want me to do this, please show me in a way that isn't confusing to me, so that at least I can do the right thing. Because he might not actually tell you. He might not say, I want you to do this. Because what the answer might be is, I want you to do both, but you don't understand how that is now. That's the answer for Tracy, by the way, because if we'd have chosen, she's a professor at University of Maryland, and we would have thought, well, you can't do both. You know, I can't be at war and she be doing that and having kids at the same time. Actually, as it turns out, it could. She's got a magic deal now where she goes to UNMD College Park 2 days a week, and it's a full-time job, and all her classes are on those 2 days, and amazing, 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 continue on. She can have a career and be a mom at the same time. And we would not have factored for that because we didn't even know it was a possibility until God made it happen. So the bottom line is, if you pray about it long enough, the one thing that I will promise you is that God will give you the answer to that. But I don't have it for you, for sure. Mason was the next one. Sorry.
It's like 30 minutes.
I don't know. I have no idea what I was going to say. I might remember later.
Perfect. I'll consider that answering two questions for the price of one.
Well, and I don't know, based on what you just said, if you would feel this is already addressed. Let me know if that is the case. But something James said made me think about, again, the claim about even primary in sex being procreation. That, too, when I think about it, is that I don't know if I have proof for either, if that makes sense.
I was going to say, biblically, it seems like the primary purpose of, like, marriage and stuff is so that you don't have sex with a lot of people. Like that seems like, in the Bible, if you look for the primary purpose of marriage, it seems like, so you only have sex with one person. because it's bad if you don't.
Like, well, and I feel like assigning primary may be our preference or reading into it, because it isn't said, at least from what I have been able to discern. So that's that was just something I was thinking about. Was there a reason that you would say primary? Would you still say primary?
You're right. It is poorly evidenced in so far as you're saying, well, the command to be fruitful and multiply is a general order. It was all creation, including flowers. So can you take that and say, and maybe the next place I would go to, I forget the guy who was killed for basically doing coitus interruptus type of stuff with his dead brother's wife, who he was bound to marry by the law, etc. The idea there was a duty to it. So it seems like God had something to do about families and reproduction and all that kind of stuff. And I do think, I mean, you know, it's something that's brought up by atheists all the time of, well, you know, you're only a Christian, you're only a Jew because you were born into a Christian family. Well, that's not exactly right, but it's not exactly wrong either, right? So what you say is, had Jews and Christians reproduced at the rate that everybody else did, maybe the world would look differently today. So, you know, it's all speculative, but those are the kinds of verses that I would go back to at least make the point. But the reason I would be conservative in this regard is knowing that the natural result of it is one thing, and knowing that it seems to at least be evidence in Scripture that that's the case, and considering that the primary responsibility, while not a law, seems to be at least a good inference. And so I would make it more a good inferential statement than to pronounce upon it. In fact, and now to Steve after this comment, the only law you will ever hear me pronounce on, unequivocally, is this: love your neighbor. With love, God being the understood there. Anything other than that, to me, is a speculative way of how to go about loving your neighbor, and maybe I don't understand it perfectly.
I just want to go back to gender and identity. And I think I missed something else. But anyways, so we're all messed up, we're all broken. Some people are more broken than others.
Amen.
So if someone has a gender identity problem, what is the solution?
Great question. The solution is this: seek your identity, your true identity. I feel like I got an identity problem, or I got a question about my identity. Seek your true identity. Is there a true identity? Well, okay, we made the case today of why there would be a true identity. Seek the true identity.
In this case, don't
listen to me. I'm not going to tell anybody their identity. Let God tell you your identity, because he's the only one with the right to do so.
And that's, in this case, you're using the word purpose because we use the word identity in a different context in the other room.
Yes, but should it? I'm all excited. Should it be? So, is your purpose and your identity different?
Yeah.
And I say no. I say no, that your identity flows from your purpose. So if your purpose is to be, let's say my purpose was to be a Marine and a ground pounder or whatever, then I ought to identify as a warrior a little bit, right? Because my identity will be, you know, if I identify as a poet primarily, and my duties all rotate around military, warrior-like stuff, then I'm going to be missing the mindset that I need to be a good warrior. If I'm going to write poems, like David, I might write poems about what it's like to be in war a little bit, right? You know, 1,000 fall on my left and right, but I will not fear. So a lot of the lessons that he writes about come from his conflicts. This is confusing now, because there's a great warrior poet tradition out there. But the bottom line is, if you are, your purpose will inform your identity, I think. And so when we ask God, what's my identity? His answer is going to be this: you're my son or my daughter. Okay, and then you say, now your question is, well, okay, well, that's who I am, but I want to know specifically who I am. Am I your daughter who's this, or am I your daughter? And he goes, well, that depends on your purpose. And so, am I your priestly daughter? Am I your culinary daughter? Am I, you know, what? Am I your priestly son? Am I your culinary son? Am I your warrior son? What am I? And his answer back is going to be something like, part of your role will be that, but who you are is my son. And you may also do some of these things, because we want to differentiate. We don't want to be all robots that are shaped and look the same. We want to be special and unique and different. What makes us special and unique and different? There's only one thing: it's purpose and role. Which, let's be honest, a lot of the whole gender and identity stuff does flow from that too. It is a legitimate desire to be a little bit different, and I think and it can be in a good way or in a bad way, but that's how I see it. Did you have a yeah? Go ahead.
So I mean, you keep saying, okay, we'll just ask what your identity is, and then we'll solve the problem.
Yes.
But I mean, we said a couple months ago, God very rarely. Very, very, very rarely actually speaks to people in things like visions, dreams.
Yes.
Like, that's just not how God talks to most people, yes. Even the people who are earnest. So I feel like maybe I should make an appointment with Jamie Winship.
So.
I mean, is that really my best bet? Because I feel like God doesn't talk to people normally that way.
So the short answer to your question is, yeah.
Does he make appointments? Do you have them? Yeah, can I get an email?
Give me a second, Dennis. How badly do you want to know?
Very badly.
That's
very,
so,
very badly.
So what's going to stop you from finding the answer?
Doubt.
Okay. All right, good one. Yeah, good call. That's right. What else?
The answer in themselves.
Shouldn't, because by then you'll at least discover it. Now you might not be happy about it.
Yeah. Feeling like I don't have the resources.
Okay. All right. Now, will that be the case?
No.
Okay. So you can throw that out, right? Why will that not be the case?
Because you know Jamie Winship.
No. Well, let's say it's not Jamie Winship for you. Mm-hmm. Let's say Jamie Winship got hit by a bus yesterday.
Thank you.
Now what?
Yeah. I mean, I know the verse. Ask and.
Okay, but I want to break them out in order, and that's why.
Okay.
And so the reason I'm asking the diagnostic questions are this. It's in the same vein as, I forget who the guy was, some dude, I'm gonna guess 18th century, I've forgotten the story, someone, if you remember, remind me, was being led to the scaffold, and the priest was like, do you want to, you know, confess anything? He's like, look, I don't believe in God. And he said, and you don't either. And the priest, I'm paraphrasing, the priest was like, what do you mean? He goes, look, if you actually believe that people go to hell, if you actually believe that that's the result, he goes, you would crawl across England on your hands and knees on broken glass to make one convert. He goes, you don't believe this stuff. Or you would act differently, yeah.
Shots fired.
The priest didn't have much to say after that. Now, what I'm not saying is crawl across America on your hands and knees on broken glass, but what I am saying is this. Your desire to know your identity, you will know how sincere it is by how earnestly you pursue it. And remember, sincerity, lack of sincerity in your desire, or lack of desire, rather, may come from a few different places. One may be fear that God will tell you. I was afraid God was going to tell me when I was your age that he wanted me to be a missionary to Brazil or something like that, and I didn't want to live there. So instead, I lived a high life and joined the Marine Infantry and sat in mud holes that I dug myself with an e-tool. So good choice on my part. If you're afraid of what he'll say, he will not give you the answer. If you are not going to obey him, he probably will not give you the answer. Now, sometimes he does. He goes to Jonah, and he's like, go do this. And Jonah's like, no, go on. And then see what happens. But you don't want to know what happens, right? So start here. Start this and say, and this is where, I'm not a promise claimer, but you can turn around and say, Lord, you said that in the last days, which, and I think, you know, this is what you mean by the last days, that your old men will see visions and your young men will dream dreams, or the other way around. Will you show me what you want me to do? Now, and then if he doesn't, you might see. In my case, so who I am in Christ. Part of it is being part of it is what I'm doing here, right? Because let's be honest. If you don't, and this is a long answer, save your right arm unless you're exercising it, because it's going to be a minute till I'm done.
Because you don't want to fall on me unless I have it.
someone can hold me accountable if it helps. But the. My identity in Christ partially is derivative from some of the roles that I have played. Wrongly so. So my identity has become a redeemed soldier, a redeemed warrior, Marine kind of thing. Why? The actual value of what I did in Afghanistan and Colombia and wherever else is so minuscule as to be negligible. Completely negligible. In fact, if you want, I can probably make you a decent case for counterproductive. But when I walk into Bob Schul, one of my purposes was go be a leader in the youth group of Reston Bible Church. Now, if I'd have prayed for, God, what do you want me to do? And he says, I want you to go to a small Bible church in Herndon. And you'll know it's the right one because it's named after the wrong city. And I want you to be part of the youth group there, because the young men need somebody to look up to, and it's actually only five young men. So your whole purpose in life is to for you to identify with five young men. I might have tried to do something else. Well, I can do that and do whatever else I want to do, and I go off and do something else. God drug me through the mud of a few nations so that when I showed up, some young men who are valuing the wrong thing, they're watching movies with SEALs and recon guys and stuff in it, and they're like, that's what I want to be, and they're wrong. They shouldn't want that for the reasons they want that. And so they look up to me. And when I speak with authority, because that's who I was. And so when I say things to them, it was a complete and total waste of my time, and I wish I had listened to God 10 years earlier. And that he had purpose in all that, but at the end of the day, it was the wrong choice. Now they have to listen to me, because you don't get to not listen to me, right, at that point. So that's why God probably didn't tell me early on, is I wouldn't listen to him. So be in the place where you are willing to listen to him, and you'll know if you can literally get on your knees and say, if, Lord, I am willing to do anything. Like, pick what you think would be most objectionable in your own life. You're brilliant. You're going to be an astrophysicist, is your current plan. Are you willing, if God told you, to go to a community college and study home economics? If the answer is, well, okay, caterus paribus, I would rather be an astrophysicist than this. This is why I said it's going to be long. Your reasons for being an astrophysicist, what are they? Don't answer them now. But my reasons for wanting to be a fighter pilot, none of them had to do with godly. And the few of them that did were veneer. I was hiding under the, well, I can serve my country, and that's a high purpose that God calls us to do, verse unknown, in order to do these kind of things, right? Let's be honest, right? But that's what God wants. God and country, I know. That's two. God and country. I'm doing the second thing and the first thing. It's exactly what he wants. So, that's the problem. I wasn't willing to listen. I was valuing something else. And the only person who's going to hear is the person who asks without reservation. And if you can't, if you ask and you can't, now I feel more like David. I identify strongly with David. I see a lot of things in David, that both the good and the bad that I have in myself. I'm not as good as his good, and thankfully I'm not as bad as his bad, but I can at least identify a little bit with him. David didn't hear straight from God, did he? Prophets came to David. So I read the scriptures and I'm like, well, if my identity is warrior and justice guy,